sights to show you.
Whenever we're ready. See, good. Slap your legs a little bit, wake yourself up.
Yeah, it's not... But this always works. Why is it not working?
The moral of today's story is, fuck dolls.
Yeah, fuck dolls.
Did you really not know I was terrified of dolls?
I think I knew, but I felt like you could handle this, like, one a little more, but then
No.
We'll get into it. You ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready? Do you want to introduce us?
Yeah, so let's go ahead and get right into it. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex, and I am always joined by Anthony Fuentes. Hi, Anthony.
You didn't say lovely today. I look forward to it every time.
The wonderful, the lovely, the enchanting Anthony Fuentes.
That's too many words. I don't know about that.
I have to make up for it now.
That's true. That's 3 weeks worth of words right there. All right, cool. Hello, everybody. I'm Anthony.
So today we kind of alluded to it last week. But we are covering a classic of sorts, the one that strikes fear into the hearts of many.
And then makes others scoff at, like, why are you scared of this? We're fucking scared, guys.
We are talking about the 1988 film Child's Play.
Oh my god.
Chucky, motherfuckers.
Chucky, dudes. Everybody has a Chucky, like, feeling. Stories? I have stories. But, like, a Chucky, like... It provokes a reaction from people, is crazy.
Yeah, this film is what brought, I think, a fear of dolls to the mainstream,
mm-hmm.
I would say. Because 88 is like, I mean, obviously far before me. So yeah. So growing up, like, Chucky was like the, like, you know, this is why everyone's afraid of dolls. Like,
oh, yeah.
I feel like I was, like, socially ingrained with the fear of dolls before I even got to decide if I was afraid of dolls for myself.
That's true. We had a lot of, like... scary doll media just in the general consciousness while we were coming up. So it's like, oh, that's a thing. Like clowns.
Yeah, clowns. The same thing with clowns. Definitely, yeah. I mean, there's... And not to say that Child's Play is the only creepy doll flick, because there are quite a few.
Yeah.
And my fiancé happens to love creepy dolls and collects, like, creepy dolls.
Jesus, fuck.
I've already said, like, when we move into, like, an actual house, like, there's gonna be a closet. And that's it. That's the doll closet.
Real quick, growing up, it was my sister's room, because my grandmother loved porcelain dolls.
Mm-hmm.
And she just lined them up. Yeah. All in my sister's fucking room.
I think everyone had a grandma who collected porcelain dolls.
What's up with these, like, freaking old-ass people born in the 30s? Thinking, like, oh my, but it's so elegant, though, isn't it?
Look at their delicate features. Like, no, they're gonna murder me in my sleep.
She's like, why do they always stare down? Guys.
Let's jump into it, shall we? A brief synopsis, which, by the way, if you have not seen Child's Play, it's practically required reading at this point. Go see Child's Play. Pause the episode. I won't judge you. Go watch Child's Play and come back to us.
It's like 88 minutes, guys.
Yeah, it's super quick. It's super fun. It's really high energy throughout the entire film. There's not, like, a boring moment, really. Mm. So I'm going to pause. And welcome back. I'm glad you watched Child's
Play.
Yeah, look
at that. Hey, wow, what did you... Guys, are your nerves okay?
So, to jump right into it, a single mother gives her son a much sought-after doll for his birthday, only to discover that it is possessed by the soul of a serial killer.
Goddamn.
Which is, there's a lot in there.
Yeah.
So, this film was directed by Tom Holland, not Spider-Man Tom Holland.
Not Spider-Man. He probably didn't exist around this time either.
No, he's a year younger than me, so he was definitely not around.
This is
the director, Tom Holland.
Yeah, Tom Holland senior to some child, I'm sure.
Don Mancini?
Mancini, I believe, yes.
Wrote the story and screenplay. John Lafia wrote the screenplay, and Tom Holland wrote the screenplay as well.
So a lot of hands in this one.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And our cast is Catherine Hicks, Chris Sarandon, Alex Vincent, and Brad Dourif. Oh,
fucking Brad Dourif, man.
He's so great.
He's like...
I love Brad Dourif.
He's like the horror, like, guy. You're like, who do you want? You have Brad Dourif in a film.
Dourif and, like, Robert Englund.
Yes. those two exactly. I mean, Robert Englund, people know him by his face, but Brad Dourif, you hear him talk.
Brad Dourif actually starred in an episode of Criminal Minds, and it's to this day one of the creepiest episodes. It's so good.
Oh my gosh, dude. His voice actually does... chill
well, me. Well, it's because there's his Chucky voice, which mm-hmm. is like when he's like trying to sound like Chucky, but then there's his actual speaking voice, which we see in the first couple minutes of the film.
Yeah.
Where like he's just like, oh, come on, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like how he kind of like talks like kind of high pitched and kind of whiny. That's how he talks in the episode of Criminal Minds. So it doesn't, you can't, you can, it sounds familiar, but you're not just like, that's Chucky.
Yeah.
You know? For the box office, the budget was $9 million estimated, and it was released on November 13th, 1988. And that's the wide release.
A Friday the 13th. What do you know, guys?
Oh, what do you know? Its gross USA earnings is a little over $33 million, and its cumulative worldwide gross is almost $11
million. Damn. That's actually a pretty big hit for a $9 million movie.
Yeah, so it definitely made its money back. Oh, so yeah. Anthony is going to take us through some of the development.
Oh, yeah, and guys, this is going to be a weird episode because we aren't going to do a play-by-play. We're going to have a brief... The history was not short enough to like be too brief, but not long enough to like cover it. But we are going to talk about something else that influenced this episode. It's an episode of the Twilight Zone called Talking Tina.
It's not called Talking Tina. When I was looking for it, I was Googling like Talking Tina. It's called The Talking Doll.
Oh, okay. Or just called Living Doll.
Living Doll.
Living Doll. It's called Living Doll, but the episode with Talking Tina in it. And
everyone knows it as the Talking Tina like, thing because it's creepy as fuck.
She's almost as iconic, I feel like, in some... We'll talk about it. For a while. Yeah, exactly. We'll get there. But originally... Now, because Don Mancini's father worked as an ad executive, he actually wanted to do an original, dark, satirical look at children's marketing. Don Mancini had this idea when he was a junior at UCLA in 1985. He was actually watching the Twilight Zone episode of Living Doll with Talking Tina, and he was reflecting upon it. And he realized that no one had done a version of that story with a talking doll, where the doll itself was a full-fledged character. Like, he thought, like, oh, that's missing. Like, it's just inanimate and whatever it is. So he wanted to expand upon that. So Mancini was very motivated to get this script made, as he is doing really good at UCLA Film School.
Mm.
I think I actually saw an interview, and he actually said, I got a good A on something I put, like, work into. So he just wrote that energy and just wrote Child's Play independently of his studies. So
what's
it was his own
like?
Thing. I don't know. Guys, your grades don't really matter, but if you do something with it, there you go.
Right? Let your grades motivate you, or in my case, drag you into a deep, dark, spiraling depression.
That should have been an A!
Right?
C-plus piece of shit.
C's get degrees, motherfucker.
There you go, that's right, look at us, marketing, woo! Oh, man. So, but yeah, the original name of the script is actually called Batteries Not Included, and an associate of his read this script and sent it over to an agency that he was an assistant for at the time, and he got him signed on. So at 25 years old, Don Mancini had a script ready and an agent.
Wow.
Yeah, his agent told him, though, that the name Batteries Not Included was unavailable because Steven Spielberg at the time was making a film with that name.
Oh.
I've never seen. I don't know.
Honestly, it sounds like it could be a really weird porn title, so...
Oh my gosh. Look at all these toys.
Yeah, exactly. So
says the sex shop person. Oh, do people know about that real quick?
No, I used to work at a sex shop when I was an undergrad to help pay for school. So that's what I did.
Right? Guys, and then guess where this sex shop was?
In the seediest fucking part of San Bernardino. And if you're from Southern California and you're familiar with the area, it's...
The seediest part of Southern California?
Yeah, easily, yeah.
Yes.
No, it was just a really sketchy location. I worked in between there was a Turner's Gun Shop, a Cricket Wireless, my sex shop, and a Payday Loan Advanced place.
Oh my gosh.
So it was just like those four places, and
That's just begging for people to just fuck with everything.
Yeah. We got, I had to... Yeah, it was a time.
Just real quick, from being from the Inland Empire, we always called Riverside, where I'm from, like California's Wisconsin or California's Texas, and we call San Bernardino California's Iraq.
Oh, really?
Because so, the crime is insane.
Oh, my God.
Okay, but back to the thing. His agent told him of the Steven Spielberg film, and he realized, okay, I'm going to change the name to something different. So he called it Blood Buddy. Which
doesn't
I think
have the same ring to it.
No, I actually really like this one.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Blood Buddy. But then you'll find out why he named it that way anyways.
But here's the thing. Is like, Child's Play and like the trailers for Child's Play.
Oh, did you watch them?
From what I understood, because I haven't seen them in a really long time, but from what I understand, a lot of parents got tricked into seeing this movie, or letting their children see this movie,
mm-hmm.
because it was advertised as, like, it's a kid's movie.
Well, it was still, because I just watched the trailers actually before this recording. There was just, it left out a lot of the murder, maybe except one thing. It was more like a mystery kind of thing, but it didn't give off that it was going to be as violent
like
as it was.
Like a horror film? Because
yeah.
Because from what I understand, at this time when a lot of people were watching Child's Play,
mm-hmm.
like almost everyone that I talked to, like they watched it as an extremely young child, as someone mm-hmm. who should not be watching Child's Play. But they ended up watching it, and I was just like, why is that? And I realized a lot of how the movie's framed from an outside perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Child's Play. It's about a doll. Like, you know,
yeah.
like parents think it's like, it's a mystery. Like, it's
well, it's
not
people
a
had
horror
the talking
film.
Tina thing
yeah,
in their
yeah, yeah.
head.
So it's not like a horror film outright, which this is.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, I look at it like they thought of it as a kind of Goosebumps
mm-hmm.
style way.
Yeah.
So like child horror kind of thing, which it's fucking not at all.
Yeah. And that's how so many children got traumatized because they watched this movie at an incredibly young age.
And even the trailers too, because it was more than one.
Mm-hmm.
But like some people were even freaked out by that. Also, while this happened, producer David Kirshner, he was a former illustrator for Jim Henson, and he
mm-hmm.
worked on the film American Tail, which I don't know if you've ever seen that,
no.
with Fievel the Mouse.
Nope.
Oh, it's very wholesome.
Okay, that's probably why I haven't seen it.
He was in London with his wife, and he read a book called The Victorian Dollhouse Murders.
That sounds like something I would be reading.
Yeah, totally, I thought that.
Not American Tail.
No, I 100%, I'm like, oh, Alex is going to look that up later on. But this book genuinely freaked him the fuck out as he realized he's always actually had a fear of dolls. But to see it kind of manifest, he's like, okay, well, this is an intriguing idea.
Mm-hmm.
So he reached out to his head of development to make a film about a killer doll, but she already had a script on her hand. It was Don Mancini's Blood Buddy. It was about 6 months old at the time, and nobody had bought it yet. Kirshner had just signed a deal with Disney, and this was the first film that he actually brought to them.
Really?
Yeah, Kirshner, man, what the fuck?
I mean, now it'd be a little bit different, but I'm thinking, like, 1980 mm-hmm. Disney? Like, no.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had Little Mermaid, I think, the year after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they were...
But Disney was very much in the wholesome market versus where it is now, where it's in the everything market.
Actually, not true. This was pre-Little Mermaid. Disney was in the shit. I mean, it was just one of those things where they were trying to kind of branch out and figure out where to go. But, I mean, obviously, they'd go the way of Little Mermaid in the second Disney Renaissance.
Yes,
so,
which kick off that.
Which means Child's Play does not get put under that umbrella.
No.
Not at
Child's
all.
Chucky is not a Disney princess.
Oh, my God. Oh, Tiffany is the fucking princess? Oh, that'd be hilarious. Poor kids would be like, the parade.
I know.
Okay, back to the thing. So, in Blood Buddy, the doll was a supernatural manifestation of Andy's id.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so not necessarily Andy, but the character that would be Andy.
Right.
In interviews that I've seen with these guys, they refer to him as the kid, so he didn't really have the name or reputation he has now. And the doll was actually killing people that the kid, Andy, would be feeling rage or resentment towards.
Wow.
Yeah, the doll was named Buddy rather than Chucky. And at this stage in the film, he would only commit the murders when Andy was asleep. So actually, that's a pretty cool concept. I can dig that.
I dig the concept, but also, like, Andy was such a sweet kid in the movie.
Oh my God. Okay. No, we're going to get on that later, guys. Fucking some of his lines, I'm like, please save this fucking kid. okay. Well, no, guys. All right. Yes. You're going to love this. The mother was also originally going to be going through a divorce.
Oh,
so,
Instead
of having a dead husband, yeah. So the kid was going to obviously start feeling very conflicting feelings of violence and rage, which would fuel the doll when he would fall asleep. And then the buddy doll in this original script actually had synthetic blood.
That's fucking terrifying.
Yeah. So the way they wanted to do it was that this doll would have synthetic blood and be promoted that way. So when the doll injured itself, kids in the, you know, who bought the buddy dolls would have to buy Band-Aids and have it heal over and all that stuff. It's crazy.
Oh, that's terrifying. It also just reminds me of those dumb shit Baby Alive things.
Yeah.
When I was like a kid that like it would actually like pee.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I love how they're like, we're going to teach you all how to be mothers.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just like, here, have this child. And like, how much cooler would it be if it's just like, okay, this doll cut his arm. Now you have to fucking fix him. Yeah.
Making little doctors instead of little mothers. Like, right. Here, put the stitches on. Go for it. Yeah. Yeah, get needles.
Yeah.
Yeah, my buddy licensed needles. How about that?
Oh my God.
Oh, that's awesome. The buddy doll, also the way that the actual kid and the doll manifestation thing happened was that the kid would actually, what the hell was that? We had a really weird thing happen right there, guys. But weird Los Angeles sounds.
Or the pipes, because you're surrounded by them.
I am surrounded by pipes. Again, like last week, my apartment is basically Jeff Goldblum's character in The Flies.
Yeah, the science loft from The Fly.
Yeah, that's my apartment.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But the way that the actually started with the doll doing the killings is the kid Andy gets injured.
Mm.
And the doll's also already injured, so their blood mixes. Yeah, and then the doll starts taking...
That sounds sanitary.
It sounds weird how you would explain that. Like, it's still a synthetic blood.
Right.
But they called this part of the film the blood ritual. And actually, originally, the idea was that it was going to toy with the idea of the killer could be Andy. For most of the film. So it left the audience mysterious as was the doll committing the murders or was the kid committing the murders? Which you kind of see some of it.
You see ghosts of that in this.
Kirschner Mancini decided to bring Fright Night director Tom Holland on board. Tom Holland would actually sometimes be afraid of toys as he was a kid. He actually also had a fear of dolls. So this really intrigued him as well. And they got somebody else to rewrite. This guy, his name's John Laffia. There's not a lot on him. But he went to go to Toys R Us and study dolls. So I guess he brought that to it. I'm not 100% sure. But he actually did continuously check the doll's voice mechanism. So a lot of that, I think, is coming from this guy. So he
fucking
just
hate dolls.
Yeah, with voices, man. They're humanoid. They're not quite fucking there. And
yeah, that's Uncanny Valley.
It's Uncanny Valley of shit. And their voices are always just this, like, box of, like, bzz, 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 bzz. I love you. Fuck you.
No, like, don't love me. Please don't.
Don't love anything. You're a fucking object.
Yeah, no. Even as a kid, it was really hard for me to develop a suspension of disbelief, which is why I read so much instead of playing with toys as much.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was easier for me to, like, envision what was going on if I was reading it instead of doing it myself, because I would get caught up in my own logistics. Like, I would just be like, this isn't fucking practical. Barbie's fucking dream house shouldn't be like this.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We didn't have too much money, so what I would end up doing was getting, like, encyclopedias and books and stuff, and I would create, and then connects, and create towns and houses, and I'd just get all the toys, and they'd all have their own character, so Spider-Man was, like a fucking nerd, and, like, all of that, and I'd just play, like, little roles. It was, like, a day-to-day kind of thing.
Adorable.
Yeah, I had too much imagination as a kid.
That's
too much.
Good. That's no such thing. That's
really true.
That's adorable, though. Like, I had imagination. It was just, like, from reading. So, like, I would read, and, like, it turned into a maladaptive daydreaming type situation as I got, like, older.
Yeah.
But, so now I can't not daydream. But, yeah, I would read, and then I would be able to envision what was going on. Like, I could see it pretty clearly. And then I would continue the story. Like, so I'd finish a book, and then I'd be like, laying there at night, just being like, well, what would happen after? And that's how I'd fall asleep.
And a sequel book, you're like, that's not what I thought of at all. This writer fucking sucks.
Yeah, I read a lot of, like, the American Girl books when I was a kid, so it was that kind of stuff. Because it took place in different historical times.
Ooh.
So, like, my favorite was this one about this girl named Samantha, who lived in Victorian, like, like, East Coast, like, Victorian-type areas.
Yeah.
But I fucking loved it.
Oh, man, that sounds fun. See, we had a good childhood.
Yeah. But we didn't have dolls.
We didn't have dolls. No, no. These were all action figures for me.
I had dolls that would blink.
Oh, fuck.
It was only, like, if you, like, upright, like, their eyes would be open. And then if you, like, laid them down, like, to, like, sleep or whatever, their eyes would close. And even that, I just wanted to, like, tape their eyelids open.
I have a story about that. I have a total story about that that we're going to talk about after we're done with this history.
Oh, okay.
Jesus fuck. So, originally, the mother was an advertising executive who was the mastermind behind the ad campaign. And it would toy with the audience for a bit, obviously, as to whether Andy or the doll was the killer. But the tone was very satirical. And it was a commentary on advertising in the 80s. And again, he was able to pull this because he's dead. He lived it. Mancini lived it with his father, so he knew ad campaigns from their base and how they got developed. So he wanted to just tackle that shit.
80s advertising. What was advertising like before the internet?
It's, you know what? But 80s has a very commercial culture, if you look back. Like,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like TV. Like TV commercials was definitely where it was at. Netflix has the 80s documentary series, and it talks a little bit about that, especially about, like, TV and stuff, and around, like, MTV and everything. It's really fucking cool.
So. Well, right, they got rid of the laws that said you couldn't advertise in certain ways to children.
Yeah.
That was in that CNN thing, right?
I think so. No, yeah, a lot of how, like, culture sort of shifted in the 80s around how we consumed media changed, because that's also where people started getting more uptight about, like, parental advisories for music.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of shit. But it's also a time where, like, comic code stuff was also finally, like, you know, people were kind of loosening up about, like...
Oh, right, the comic code. I remember that fucking Frank Miller and shit. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, okay, cool. Oh, guys, okay, we can get a lot of history on the 80s. I mean...
because the 80s is, like, a pet fascination of mine.
Same here, yes, absolutely. Because it's... consumer, like, as fuck.
No, I love the 80s.
And then deregulated, and then a good old recession, early 90s. Yeah.
There was also, like, a lot of 80s documentaries on, like, MTV when I was a kid, and my dad, like, grew up in the 80s, so for him it was really, like, reminiscent, but for me, I would watch it, and I'd be like, this is so cool.
Same here. On MTV and VH1, my parents are teens in the 80s.
Right.
So they would always tell me stuff, but I'd watch that stuff, too, because it was fascinating. I'm like, because it was the era right before us, basically.
Right. Well, weren't you, like, born in the late 80s?
Late 80s, yes. Yeah, but still, I was, you know, I couldn't compute things until the 90s.
Well, even then, like, even, like, it was only, like, the later half of the 90s that I even computed anything anyway.
Oh, interesting. Man, see, you guys are learning all about us today. But they decided that the doll needed more backstory and settled upon the idea of possession.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Charles Lee Ray voodoo angle was actually Tom Holland's idea. Mancini thought the voodoo angle was kind of hilarious.
It has a brief moment. Like, the voodoo type, witchcraft, whatever the fuck, it's only really relevant to explain how he knew what he knew.
Yeah, and get one kill. That's it. That's all it is.
Like, there wasn't... Like, it was really only, like, a 5-minute segment of the film. Like, it wasn't a huge part of the movie. The only thing is, it was there kind of to answer the question, like, how did he know that dumb chant?
Yeah. Fucking chant. And it becomes a franchise staple. Like, it's just to the whole freaking thing.
DJ does it all the time just to fuck with me.
Oh, my God.
Like, DJ knows the whole thing, and I'm just like... All right.
I almost put the translation in here. Almost, but I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Oh, is it bad?
No, it's stock. It's just about what you would expect. Like, oh, bring my soul to blah blah blah. Oh, okay. It's just, you know, in
that kind of typical shit.
Exactly.
Right. What language is he speaking?
I think it's Jamaican.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think. I can't remember. I've seen interviews with Don Mancini. He really did not like the voodoo thing, but he always talks shit on it. And his face, he's just like, who the fuck would think of that bullshit? Like, but you know.
Tom fucking Holland.
Tom Holland, apparently. Not Spider-Man.
No. But regular, Tom Holland, the director of Fright Night.
With dumb ideas sometimes. But he made this movie.
He also made Fright Night.
I haven't seen Fright Night, actually. I know. You guys see her face right now. That was a glare.
This is my... I'm done with yeah. Anthony's bullshit face.
Of all the 80s horror... You know I love 80s horror. That's the one I hadn't seen. I don't know why.
We'll have to watch it. Because there's also that in a remake, which is arguably not awful.
Oh, arguably not awful is always a good thing when it comes to remakes. I firmly believe that.
So, anyway, continue. But
by the end of development, Don Mancini had stated that the finished script only had about 50% of his original ideas, with the rest coming from Holland, the other writers, and it became this weird amalgamation. The studios were really into the idea of a killer doll. I mean, the 80s had just had this big horror-like surge, and nobody had done this yet. Until late 80s. So everybody's like, okay, this script is out right now. We gotta, like, bid for it. And people were bidding left and right. So Disney didn't get it. MGM eventually won it out, and MGM produced this film. But they'd only produce this film. And there's a very big story as to why that is. But first, let's see how Chucky got created.
Yeah.
And Senorita Webster, you ready for this shit?
Yeah. So, Brad Dourif was actually on vacation in Mexico when he got the call to play Charles Lee Ray in the film. The name Charles Lee Ray is derived from Charles Manson, Lee Harvey Oswald, and James Earl Ray. So there's a little.
I like that. That's good.
Yeah. So that's a little fun true crime factoid for you.
Hey, who's the worst one out of those three?
Who's the worst one? I guess Manson.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't technically pull the trigger on a lot of stuff, right, but he did create.
Yeah, but also I think culturally Charles Manson, and then fucking Lee Harvey Oswald. Like, I have my own opinions about Kennedy. The JFK assassination. Interesting. So. Oh,
this will be a much longer podcast if we get into that.
So I'm not going to go into it, but yeah, I would say Charles Manson.
You're like, well, Lee Harvey Oswald is allegedly the second worst. How about that?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Quote, unquote. Quote, unquote. No, but Charles Lee Ray having a partner, Eddie Caputo, is actually a reference to the Hillside Stranglers.
Ooh, if so, we put them in the list, they're actually pretty fucked up,
I would put, if we're including the Hillside Stranglers, they're my number. They would be the worst.
Yeah, because they're...
Because they're fucked.
If you look at the details of the fucking crimes of these fucking guys.
Fucking Bianchi.
Oh, Bianchi. Ooh, yeah, he was a sadistic piece of shit.
Yeah, so, anyway.
we just love true crime, guys, just yeah, so you know, we love true. It.
Yeah, so, we talk about it frequently. But the design of Chucky himself was modeled after both Cabbage Patch Kids, which is very obvious, mm-hmm. and the My Buddy Dolls, with Cabbage Patch Kids being the primary basis in the script. Mancini wasn't aware of My Buddy Dolls when, conceiving of the script
yeah,
at first.
The first draft of mm-hmm. it, yeah. He didn't know about it until later on.
Alex Vincent, who played Andy, got the part after lying about forgetting a line with a cuss word during his reading. The line was, he said Aunt Maggie was a real bitch and got what she deserved. And so he lied about forgetting it.
Oh, yeah.
That's adorable. God, he's so fucking precious.
And he was younger, too, at the time, so he's even littler and just like, I can't say the line.
No, he said...
I can't remember the line.
He kept telling them he couldn't remember the line and was actually very convincing, to the point where the producers started to believe him. They thought if he could pull that off, he could at least act in a future film.
Oh my God. Like, yeah, seeing them talk about this, like, they all have this... look in their eyes like, oh my gosh, this precious child just would not fucking... He just kept lying because he didn't want to say the word bitch.
Oh, adorable. When he did say it in the movie, I was just like, oh, you sweet summer child.
But he says it so, like, good, too.
I know.
But he said that bitch got what she deserved.
I know. Oh, so good. Alex Vincent and Karen Barclay were very uncomfortable on their first run-through. Alex didn't want to pretend she was his mom, and Barclay had never played a mom before. Vincent's mom gave Barclay a small crystal ball and told her to give it to him and tell him it's a magic ball. This was a special moment for him.
Isn't that nice?
That's so cute.
That's, like cute as shit.
I think that's adorable. Like, Alex Vincent's mom just trying really hard to make it. Because, I mean, this kid was so sweet. He didn't want to pretend someone who wasn't his mom was his mom. Like, how fucking pure.
They picked the right kid, honestly.
Totally. I mean, yeah, his voice gets kind of annoying at times, but mm-hmm. also, like, he's just a fucking precious kid.
They could have picked a more annoying kid, honestly. With that,
The kid from The Babadook.
Yeah. Or, like, most other horror children, honestly. They're the worst.
Depends. This might be my favorite horror child.
Yeah.
I will say, in the very beginning, when he's making, like, breakfast for his mom and everything, it was cute, but, the whole time DJ was like, wouldn't you think that's adorable if our kid did that? And I was just like, absolutely not. Like,
you see all that butter? You know how much a tub of butter goes for now, kid?
Well, I was just like, he's making a mess. There's sugar everywhere. This is disgusting.
Mom's becoming diabetic now?
No, I'd just be like, DJ's like, you wouldn't think that was endearing. And I would be like, absolutely not.
Here you go, Mom. Just grab the fucking...
Okay, like, I wouldn't be like that bitchy, but I'm just like, that's... a terrible idea,
yeah.
And I'm horrified at the concept. And DJ's just like, you're gonna be a really great but really weird mom.
That's awesome.
Oh god, it was awful. Though only cast as Charles Lee Ray at the time and not the actual voice of Chucky, Brad Dourif acted out all the Chucky parts in rehearsals with his movements and voice being recorded. During some scenes with Andy and Chucky, they would play back lines from Brad Dourif to give to Alex Vincent so he would know what lines to respond to and what tone they were. They also used these voice recordings so that they could map mouth movements with puppeteering during Chucky's dialogue scenes.
That's pretty cool, actually. Yeah.
So that's cool. I think it's really interesting that initially Brad Dourif wasn't actually going to voice Chucky.
No, yeah, they just wanted him for Charles Lee Ray. But I've seen the auditions, or not the auditions, the tapes that they're referring to here, where he's acting out the scenes with the Andy and the mom, and he's into it. He's like, it's like watching Andy Serkis do Gollum. It's the exact same shit.
Really?
Yeah, except just Brad Dourif with the one voice he knows how to do. and like, but he's walking and like falling on the ground and everything. It's pretty badass.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Aw, creepy, creepy guys playing creepy creatures.
He has a creepy face. He does.
Brad Dourif. Andy Serkis?
They both have equally creepy faces, I think, actually.
I've met Andy Serkis, though, so.
You've met Andy Serkis?
Oh, shit, didn't I tell you?
You've never told me this.
Yeah, I met Andy Serkis and Lee Pace at Comic-Con one year because I was camping out for, it was for the last Hobbit movie.
Oh, interesting. The Five Armies, whatever it is?
Yeah. I was camping out for that. Well, technically, I was camping out for Marvel, but it was in the same room, so they were going through. So in the middle of the night, Lee Pace and Andy Serkis are walking through the tents where everyone was camping. And I wake up and I'm like, oh my God. I was in the set all day though, so I'm sunburnt as shit.
Oh no.
But I did meet Andy Serkis.
It's like, look at this blistery girl coming in trying to hug me. What the fuck? Andy, no. Stand back. I got this.
No, they were both very, very nice. It was very sweet. I barely remember the whole thing. The only reason I believe it happened is because I have photos.
Oh my gosh, imagine if you didn't, you're just like, it could have been just one guy dressed similar to Andy Serkis.
I know, no, yeah.
Yeah, we'll take a picture.
Right. Andy Serkis, I'm your biggest fan. it was really cool.
So with that, the film's finally being put into production.
Yes, and, tell us about that.
Filming was primarily based in Chicago, and it actually began on New Year's Eve during the coldest parts of the Chicago winter. So that was stupid.
Yeah.
Well, then these were mostly outdoor scenes too.
There was a lot of outdoor scenes, and also I could tell it was Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was like not very much not like The Fly, where The Fly was kind of like ambiguous in the location. The second he was on the train, I was like, you're in Chicago.
Oh yeah.
That is the Chicago, like, for sure.
So while the outdoor scenes were shot in Chicago, The indoor stuff was done actually in Culver City of all places. You know, just regular LA shit.
Yeah.
The animatronics were fucking insane though.
Yeah.
They were like seeing this shit. What they shot of behind the scenes. Holy crap! The details in the face. The special effects team worked exhaustively though. They worked more than any other cast or crew member on this set. They would have to get everything done right before, and then deliver everything to set, and then manage it all on set. So it was just all exhausting. Like, they look back at it, and their eyes are just like, fuck me, Jesus. Mm-hmm. Do you remember those fucking 19-hour days and shit?
Jesus.
Yeah. And during this, because they were first time using these animatronics for this character, throughout the production, they would kind of get an idea of the character to learn how Chucky would move and kill. So nice. This is a kind of almost improv process, as learn as they go along kind of thing. Everyone, however, was afraid of how Alex Vincent would react upon seeing a fully animatronic Chucky. So they introduced him to the 9 people that operated him.
Oh.
I know. Vincent thought they had the coolest fucking jobs in the world, though.
Like, I love this kid, dude. I love this kid.
Seriously, he was actually really fascinated with the process and said he knew Chucky wasn't trying to kill him, and when the director yelled cut, Andy would actually just go back to acting normal.
Oh.
Yeah. This is a brilliant fucking child, honestly, for this movie. They did a good job with the casting. Maggie's death was originally going to be her electrocuted in the bathtub. But ultimately, they decided against doing that.
Mm.
This would actually be used later on for the character of Tiffany in Bride of Chucky, which is actually kind of cool.
God, I love Tiffany.
I do, yeah.
I love Tiffany. Jennifer Tilly is like...
She's one of my... I love Jennifer Tilly. Like, oh, yeah. I love the fuck out of Jennifer Tilly.
I adore Jennifer Tilly.
She's like one of those perfect women to me.
Yeah, she's 60.
How the fuck is she 60?
I don't know, but she's like... I don't know. She's like super banging.
Dude... Yeah, I remember as a child, Jennifer Tilly in Liar Liar, I was like, who is this beautiful woman?
it's Tiffany. No, I love Tiffany. Like, I love Tiffany as a character, but I also love Jennifer Tilly, and I love how later it becomes really meta, how then Jennifer Tilly is Tiffany.
Yeah, and, like, it's really, like some back and forth right?
It's really interesting, but no, I love it.
Her voice, too, like, is actually kind of so distinct.
She has a very distinct voice that... I adore. Because she's also on Family Guy.
Yeah, she is.
Mm-hmm. So, and every time I hear, like, that's the only thing that I, like, actively enjoy about Family Guy. Because DJ loves it. I hate Family Guy.
Yeah, we don't want to get on Family Guy. I'll talk. It will just be an angry podcast. Okay, we've gushed enough about Jennifer Tilly.
Tilly, if you're listening to this by any weird chance, I love you.
Okay, we've made pleas to Aronofsky.
Darren Aronofsky, fuck, who else?
Cronenberg?
Cronenberg, maybe? Yeah. Cronenberg and now Jennifer Tilly.
And now Jennifer Tilly.
Every week now we have to have some shout out of, like, I love your work.
That's true.
Anyway, continue.
So when it came to the actual filming Chucky, mm-hmm. what they would do is they would move the Chucky doll on dollies and film real close up so they don't have to show his legs moving and they can just animate his face, which is pretty cool, right? Right. They would also build sets 30% larger than the actor who played him, Ed Gale, in a Chucky suit. And he was only 10 inches taller than the Chucky doll. Yeah. Crazy, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they would build these big, like, the fireplace I saw, it was fucking huge. And, like... But,
that's great.
Right? And he would actually study how the animatronics did his movement. So when he finally got a chance to do it, he would be a little stiffer and start kind of, like, trying to emulate it as much as he can. Karen Barclay would often pretend Chucky was a snake in the scenes where she's being stalked by him or having to, like, actively look for him. In particular, the scene when she discovers he is the Chucky doll, which we're going to really break down that scene.
Okay.
When it comes later on. But she ended up, it's funny, because one of the Chucky's puppet designer, his name was Kevin Yeager, they actually met on this set and fell in love. And
aww.
Right, 1 year later, they were married and just... It was one of those things that was just, they just stayed together.
Really?
Yeah.
Yay, true love was made on this set.
Seriously, it's franchise.
This is like an anti-curse set.
It is. with the really fucked up film.
I know.
So since they were not intending to use Brad Dourif's voice, there's actually a whole cut of the film with a different actor where Don Mancini, his quote says, he sounded really gay.
Yay.
Yeah.
That's not nice.
I know, but that was Mancini. He was just like, yep. It's been rumored or assumed that the original voice actor or actress for Chucky was actually Jessica Walter, who plays Lucille Bluth in Arrested Development. Yep, and Mallory Archer in Archer.
Ugh,
imagine. Bitchy Jessica
fucking
Walter.
Lucille Bluth? Oh yeah, my god.
That would be fucking amazing.
I don't think I could take it seriously.
But... like her saying you can't keep a good guy down. Oh. Oh Jesus.
No, that just makes me think of like that one scene where like how much could a banana cost?
$5. $10. Like her yelling would be just the same as her, and that's how you get ants. Oh, that's awesome.
That's hysterical.
During the recording session of the scene where Chucky is set on fire, Brad Dourif's 7-year-old daughter actually wandered into the recording studio without any adult in the room, knowing that she was there. She witnessed her father's screams in agony. And people were like, what the fuck's going on? Where's this crying sound coming from? And it was her in the corner basically like, why is my dad screaming?
Oh no. Which is hysterical because his daughter goes on to actually star in The Curse of Chucky.
Mm-hmm. She's part of the later franchise. That's true.
Yes, she's the main character.
In the last two, right?
The last one I saw was The Curse of Chucky.
Oh, she's in Cult of Two, I believe.
Cult. No, yes, Cult, not Curse. Yes, The Cult of Chucky, which I did watch relatively recently, and it was actually really good.
Yeah, we'll get into our thoughts on the franchise, but I do love those last two, actually.
Yeah, she's in it, and she's super great, and I didn't even know that she was Brad Dourif's daughter until DJ pointed it out to me, and I was
interesting.
Like, oh, that's so cool, I didn't know that, so... There, she's been there through the entire thing, which I think is really cool.
It's a family franchise, isn't it? Look at that. You know, fucking marriage happening in here, just bringing in the child.
Yeah.
Hey, these producers.
Anyway, the first cut was actually over 2 hours long.
Yeah.
So, yikes. And it was very taxing on test audiences, naturally. So they decided it needed to be trimmed down significantly. A 2-hour-long horror film? No thank you.
Yeah, you'll find out why right now.
Yeah. Jeez. Some of the scenes that were deleted or cut down, the original opening in which Mike is dressed in women's clothing in order to catch Charles Lee Ray. If you watch the normal opening scene closely, you can see that Mike throws a dress to the ground when he chases Ray down the street. So.
Oh, that sounds like a very interesting opening.
Yeah, no, yeah. Two, Anthony celebrating his birthday with Chucky.
Anthony? Yeah.
Fuck. Anthony, yeah, you're in this movie. Did you know that?
I will never celebrate my birthday with Chucky.
I'm going to get you a Chucky doll for your birthday.
How don't you dare. That actually puts fear into my heart right now.
Oh, okay. My bad. Andy is celebrating his birthday with Chucky.
You all right? Right? Okay.
Fuck. Okay.
And we'll take a photo of me celebrating with Chucky on my birthday
phone. I'm gonna fucking kill you.
Photoshop it.
Anyway. Three. Andy falling into a ditch in front of Eddie Caputo's hideout as it explodes, which I would have liked to have seen, because mm-hmm. when I saw it actually happen in the film, mm-hmm. I was just like, is the kid okay?
Yeah, no, that's true. One of those little logical inconsistencies,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you know me with mm-hmm. my continuity.
And you know me, I don't give it. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, the kid's there.
Hmm. Yeah, whatever. Four, Chucky's witch doctor friend, John, performing a ritual dressed in voodoo priest clothes. Five, Andy befriending a young girl during his time at a mental hospital, which later on, Chucky tricks the same girl to help him find Andy, which we see because the mom was, when they're in the mental institution, she's talking to this little girl, and she actually says, oh, Chucky was here and wanted to find him. So there's kind of an implication of that, and I kind of wish there was a little bit more elaboration on that, but again, I understand because the movie's 88 minutes long and it's pushing it at 88 minutes.
I mean, it's a very fast-paced film, but I still would like some of these scenes, mm-hmm. honestly. They don't seem that bad.
Yeah. Six, more footage of Chucky stalking Andy at the mental hospital. The DVD commentary also mentions an alternate ending in which Mike is the one that kills Chucky by decapitating him with a baseball bat. Each of these scenes above were deleted during the editing of the film and are considered lost. Only stills of the scenes remain.
Oh, yeah. I hate lost films.
Yeah.
Like, it just irks me.
It doesn't irk me as much as it kind of creeps me out. Like, I love lost footage as, like, a concept because it's just creepy to me. Like, I'm just like, this existed and now it's not there anymore.
Never. Like,
yeah,
it's gone.
Like, forever.
Oh, so, and it's people's time and effort.
Yeah. It's people's time and effort, but it feels, like, almost supernatural, almost, because it's just, like, there's, like, this air of mystery around it, especially considering how many people, like, want to see it.
Yeah, no, that's true. And it makes me more intrigued, obviously. It just plays on my psychology.
They actually brought in Don Mancini to evaluate various cuts of the film. David and Don finally decided on a cut, but they had no time to test it. There was also no premiere. David simply rented out the Academy on Wilshire and brought every box of Good Guy dolls and made a tunnel towards the entrance of the theater. He also put up the film's artwork all around the interior of the Academy.
I love how it's like a makeshift premiere.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking dope. Like, we already paid for this in the budget. Let's just slap him over here.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. The film was released on the same date, November 9th, 1988, as the opening scene when Charles Lee Ray transfers his soul to the doll. So that's fun.
That's cool. I like that, too.
It's a cool little tidbit of, like, funness.
Little detail, you know?
David and Don would start a tradition where they stood out front of the theater pretending to be patrons and would talk aloud about how scary the movie was. They would do this for all subsequent films. So this is actually a marketing tool called a whisper campaign. And people actually do this. I saw them actually do this on Glow.
Really?
The Netflix show, where basically a way to increase interest in the film is to pretend. So basically, in this particular context, or in the context of this, by pretending to be patrons or pretending to be people interested, it was to build up a sense of competitiveness amongst the people around them so that they would feel like, oh, these people are interested in this show. I need to go check it out because I want it for me, you know? So it's a really actually interesting campaign. And when it's done right, it's incredibly effective.
I mean, it plays on people's psychology of exclusion.
They would actually also scream in the film when they knew a scare was about to occur, as it would create a ripple effect of fear in the audience, which, like, this is such, like, a high school move.
Oh, it totally is.
Because, like, this happens with, like, shitty high schoolers in movie theaters now, where, like, it's building up to a scare, and, like, you'll hear some guy in the background just be like, oh, no!
Oh, dude, no. It can go either way. Sometimes it's funny, but when I watched Hereditary, and my other two friends that listen to this podcast can vouch, it was a piece of shit because people were... It was an LA Live, which I feel like it's a big enough theater where you get all kinds of people and a lot of dummies. Mm-hmm. And, like, one of these two people behind us were doing their own fucking podcast while we were watching, commenting the whole time, what are they going to do? Like that. Ugh. I hate it.
That sucks.
Yeah.
It does. Still haven't seen Hereditary.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, shit.
It seems like the kind of thing that would actually fuck me up.
Would love it.
Really?
I mean, it'll fuck you up. But it's...
That's what I'm afraid of.
But it's good.
I'll have to watch it.
But also, I was actually seeing the interview where he talked about this, and they would keep doing the Scream thing at multiple screenings, but sometimes... Because they got so used to it, they didn't think that they would do it too early sometimes, and people would be like, what? And then the scare would happen, like, oh, shit.
They're ridiculous.
Fucking teenagers.
Fucking teenagers.
Adult teenagers.
I mean, they're, like, young adults at this point. Yeah. Like, they're in their 20s.
They're in their 20s.
I am a young adult. Like, and I still wouldn't do this.
No, that's true.
I am me. Alex Vincent's grandfather actually rented out the Chinese theater to play the film for the cast, which is... I didn't know Alex Vincent's grandfather was loaded.
Yeah, the whole fucking Chinese theater, right? Dude.
Jeez. Reception for the film was positive, with critics praising the special effects and the film's clever twist on the killer doll concept. Roger Ebert actually gave the film 3 out of 4 stars, praising the film's energy. So, again, and this guy keeps popping up.
Because he hates horror. So to him, it's like to say a good thing is actually really exceptional.
That's so interesting. I'm just saying, because the one time I completely fucked up Roger
Ebert. Oh, Ebert?
And you were just like, you don't know who that is? I'm like, I don't know a lot of
Refer things. To our previous podcast.
I know, previous episode. I think it was The Omen?
It was The Omen, yeah. I believe, yes.
So, upon the film's release, large crowds gathered in the front offices of MGM Studios to protest, claiming the film would incite children to commit violence. Producer David Kirshner watched this go on for 2 days while it was being covered in the news and was disturbed, quote-unquote, by what was transpiring on screen. His colleague at MGM, Jeffrey Hilton, told Kirshner he could get the crowd to disappear in 10 minutes. As Kirshner was watching from his office, Hilton went down to the mob, had a brief discussion with their leader, ended it with a handshake, and the crowd suddenly dispersed, infuriating reporters on the scene. Hilton has never told Kirshner what he told the leader to get the crowd to disperse. I want to know so fucking I know. Bad.
That's also like lost footage right there, because this guy will take the shit to his grave. Watch fucking Hilton.
I know. I'm just like, I want to know.
Like, what did you say? What did you say?
Well, he has like the answer to world peace.
I know.
Or something. Right? Like, he has the answer to end all conflicts, all wars, and he's just like, he uses it to stop some protests play.
It's some voodoo shit. He's like, okay, listen.
Look into my eyes.
Mr. Hilton, you get this gift one time. You can solve one problem with absolutely no repercussions. Now, there's a crisis in the Middle East, but you're only able to use it in the year 2018. You have 30 years. So, go free reign. He's like, I could wait 30 decades, or 30 years.
Or I could use it right now.
Or I could do it to fuck with Kirshner right now, because he is just losing his shit.
I'm gonna do it.
He just goes down to rubber baby buggy bumpers. What? They're just gone.
Oh, I hate you for this. Anyway. The film was disowned by MGM/United Artists due to the controversy surrounding it, as well as the violent subject matter. Universal ended up buying the rights to all the sequels, though this has created some rights issues on how Chucky is used in later films, including the upcoming reboot, which I'm sure we will talk about later.
Oh, yeah.
MGM has the rights to the name Child's Play, as well as the ability to use some of the concepts from the first film, while Universal retained the rights to Chucky himself.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why we're able to have Chucky stuff at Universal Halloween Horror Nights.
Right. Last year's
Last year, the Terror Tram. Ugh, yeah.
Which was pretty cool, actually.
I wanted to see it so bad, but I didn't go last year, so... the original film will be rebooted by MGM, while Universal and Mancini will continue the original film's storyline by means of an 8-part TV series, in which Brad Dourif is set to return. There are also talks of a crossover between Chucky and Freddy Krueger in a film called Child's Play on Elm Street, though the last we heard of this was in 2017, and we are barreling into 2019. So.
Yeah, and the world was just a different place. Yeah. It just keeps changing too much. this is one of those things that's going to fall by the wayside for sure.
Yeah. The My Buddy doll line, the doll that looks a lot like Chucky, never recovered from the damage to its image after the release of Child's Play and subsequently went totally under.
Mm-hmm.
The franchise is known for possibly inspiring the real-life murder of 16-year-old Suzanne Kapper and 2-year-old James Bulger. The film in question, though, is Child's Play 3, so we'll get to those at a different time.
Yeah, that's an interesting case.
But there's potential blood on the hands of the Child's Play franchise.
Potential. It also comes around the time of the UK video nasty things, too, mm-hmm. so it's one of those sensationalist things.
Yeah.
But the cases themselves, one of them directly references Chucky in the murder itself. The torture itself, I should say.
Really? Oh, that's awful. I've never heard of this, which is, like, rare for me, but that reminds me of the Slender Man.
Oh, thing. It's a lot like that.
Okay.
It's actually a lot like that.
Okay, yeah.
So. Oh, man. But, guys, one's coming in one of the sequel episodes, just so you know.
Yeah. And for the Slender Man thing, watch Beware the Slender Man on HBO. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Such a good documentary.
Oh, dude, like, that one's fucked up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's freaky as fuck. But, yeah. So, that is it for our history. We're actually doing pretty good, so we can jump into some analysis on the film. Anthony has some pretty great questions, so
let's see. Well, first, the biggest question of all, what does you think of the film?
Obviously, I've seen this film a couple of times. This is actually, I want to say, only the second or third time I've watched it.
Really?
So, yeah. Chucky legitimately freaked me out, so I didn't. Mm-hmm. I kind of avoided the franchise for a while. I think one of the first Child's Play or Chucky films, because that's the thing, is because the name has gone through so many changes, I mm-hmm. kind of just call all of them like movies with Chucky in it.
Yeah, Chucky movies. No, I agree. That's...
Yeah. Well, because like when I first realized that the film was initially called Child's Play, I was like, oh, I really just thought it was called Chucky.
Because mm-hmm.
everyone just says, oh, have you seen, you know,
they
Chucky.
Always say the first Chucky movie. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's how it's usually referenced.
Yeah. Or just Chucky, which mm-hmm. I didn't even realize. I think there actually is a sequel that's just called Chucky, though.
Maybe? No, they just use Chucky the name in everything after Child's Play 3 has Chucky in it.
Yeah, like Bride
the title.
Of Chucky.
Cult of Chucky,
Cult
all this
of Chucky.
Stuff.
Seed of Chucky.
Yes, exactly.
Which, I think Seed of Chucky was the first one I saw.
Oh, that's the most comical one.
Yeah, it's hysterical.
Yeah.
It was funny. I wasn't freaked out or anything. Because I think in the later films, it definitely took a more satirical, funny
significantly turn, different turn. Yes.
As opposed to the first one, which is just fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the later ones, even, like, The Bride of Chucky and all that, like, it just became satirical and funny.
Yeah.
And just, like, dark humor.
They're very meta, too.
Yes, the super meta. While The Cult of Chucky kind of goes back to its roots and it's more of just a horror film being a horror film instead of, you know, having, like, dolls fuck. Which is, like, it happens several times and I'm just like, all right.
Yeah, that's funny.
No, I really enjoyed it. It's a fun film. Like, it's fun. It's high enough energy. I did find myself looking at my phone a couple times, but that's mm-hmm. also because I've seen the movie more than once. So that's just my shitty attention span. So.
I've actually seen this one like probably like 10 times.
Did it have your undivided attention?
This time, no, I did the phone thing too. only again because I know the beats of the story really well.
Yeah.
But the way that, we'll get into our personal history with Chucky in just a minute. Real quick, of course, this is one of my more iconic horror films.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really love the pace of it, and I think it's a good movie. Like, it's just a good movie. It's not art. It's not whatever it is.
It's not just artsy. It's just a fun movie.
Yeah,
it's fun.
It's fun.
Not like, it's not really cerebral like, I don't know, like Hereditary
yeah.
or like
this
anything.
Isn't some Lars von Trier shit
yeah,
going
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
No.
It's not super cerebral or anything, but it's just a fun, gruesome, entertaining movie.
Yeah, entertaining.
It's entertaining.
Absolutely. Even though we were on our phones, it's just because we know the film.
Yeah, like, we know the film, and also humor and horror and I have an interesting relationship. It's very easy for humor in a horror film to just yank me right out.
Pull you out. Yeah, that makes sense. Which is interesting because the first one was Seed and that's very humorous.
Yeah. Well, it was on like that the cable channel that's all horror films, like Slash or whatever it's called. Yeah. And that's not Shudder.
No.
Shudder's the streaming service. But one of those, like, things where it's, like, they play horror films all the time, but it's never any of the good ones. It's, like, sequels all the time.
All the ones they could afford the rights to.
Yeah. It's all, like, the sequels and stuff. So, like, Seed of Chucky makes that cut. So, that's
interesting.
Why.
As for me, my personal history with Chucky is this thing was deathly scary to me as a kid. I remember watching it in my aunt's house as, fuck, how old was I? I had to be like six. Whatever Andy's age was, honestly.
You were six?
Probably a little younger, maybe five.
Holy fuck, dude.
We watched it as a family. And they're like, oh, we're all, because, you know, my family, we just watch whatever movies and the kids are there, they want to watch it, you watch it.
Wow.
Yeah. And my brother and sister were not affected by it.
Really?
They weren't. My sister, however, had a doll that looked a lot like Chucky. Now, it had blonde hair. It was a girl. It had overalls. It was all yellow with the red straps and a white shirt. And she always had it with her.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It was at my... Cause we lived there with our aunt. Mm-hmm. We all slept in the living room. So, as we're watching it on the CRT TV, so half of the movie, it's just a doll, right? And this is why I want to break down the scene coming up. So, I was into it. And then she says the portion where it's like, where she has to figure out Andy's already in the institution. And again, I'm empathizing with Andy as a kid. I'm like, well, I'm like that kid. I'm his age.
Right.
Like, so believe him. Believe him. Right. It has to be the doll, right? But then she's like trying to find it and like she sees no batteries. When she sees no batteries, my little heart was like,
oh.
Like, that means it is the doll. I was like, oh no. And then what happens is when she finds, I remember it very vividly, her pulling it up and like getting it under the couch, and I'm like underneath, I'm like already pulling the covers near where my eyes are, and my whole family, I look over to them and they are just intently staring, and I'm like, are you guys aware of like what the fuck's gonna happen? And, you know, 6-year-old me, whatever it is. I didn't say fuck, obviously, but could have said fuck in my head.
I didn't really curse in my head. I thought like damn was a bad word.
So when she says very urgently, talk or I'll throw you in the fire, and he turns around and is like, you stupid bitch. His face didn't animate for the whole film. Until that point. So his face turning and like going all mean, like the level of fear. I screamed and went underneath the fucking thing.
Was your family like, are you okay?
The mom calmed me down, I believe. Oh my God. I went in the room and I just heard the movie still. And then I went back to watch it, but I spent the back half of the film like 70-80% underneath the covers.
Oh, poor little baby.
I remember looking up and like seeing the part where Chucky, the doll's just chilling in the elevator, and the girl's like, oh, somebody left their doll in the elevator. And it's like, ugly doll. And like the way that Chucky looks though, like still fucking creepy. So even me, I'm just like,
I love that scene because that's when the elevator goes up and he's just like, fuck you.
Yeah. But I think we watched it on TV, so it was edited. The cussing was edited out. They still somehow kept the murders in.
It was so iconic though. Like, I loved that. Like, that was like, I laughed every time.
See,
like,
it's that's supposed to be a break. But when you're watching it edited for TV, it just is creepy.
Yeah, it's nothing but... Yeah, no, you can make an argument that the TV version is creepier than the unedited... Or than the
uncensored
version. Yeah. Because the violence without the cursing, or like the funny humor cursing to offset the... Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really good point. Because then it's just a menacing fucking doll.
Who doesn't have a sense of humor. He just wants to murder.
He just wants to fucking murder. Yeah, no. I spent that whole time watching it, like, just freaked out. And then his voice at the end. He's like, when he's all on fire and he's finally dying. And he's like, I am Chucky, wanna play?
Dead.
Little me was just fucked.
Yeah.
And every subsequent film scared me. I could hardly watch them. I didn't fully watch Child's Play films until I was a teenager.
So for me, completely different.
Really?
I was creeped out by dolls, and I was creeped out by Chucky, but I never watched the film as a teenager, to the point that I was in ASB, And I was in charge of distributing, or like the sweatpants and the t-shirts for gym, like the gym clothes, because you had to buy gym clothes at my high school, and you had to show up
in the gym clothes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you had to dress out. Which was a whole other story, because people would put like their sweatpants over their jeans. It was ridiculous. I did that. Like I was just like, fuck this, I'm not changing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was in charge of all of that, and I had to like sell it and all that stuff. And mm-hmm. I had my own room in our ASB area.
Oh, look at you. This is my office.
Kind of. Yeah, I mean, I'd hang out in there all the time because I was a loser. But yeah, so I set everything up and I organized it how I wanted it organized and everything. But in this ASB area, the room had a Chucky doll in it. Mm. And no one would fuck with the Chucky doll. Mm. So me, being the little smartass that I was in high school, I took the Chucky doll and I kept it on a shelf mm-hmm. in the room because no one would go in there. Just no one would bother me. And I think like one of my very first photos on Instagram ever, like high school, is of this Chucky doll on a shelf. I'm going to see if I can actually pull it up.
Pull it up, please. Pull it up, please. Oh, that's awesome.
And I was just like, this is my son and I love him or something like that or something. It's like some dumb shit.
Screenshot that bitch and put it on the fucking Instagram for us. Oh, yeah. That's going to be awesome. I love that.
But yeah, it was from like forever ago. So I was in high school when that happened. But,
Oh, real quick aside.
Yeah.
You know that doll that I was telling about my sister had?
Uh-huh.
So I got scared of that doll. And one day when I was me and my babysitter was napping.
Oh, no.
I got the doll and I buried it in the backyard. I dug a hole.
You did. You pulled a fucking talking Tina.
I did. No, yeah, I dug a hole. I fucking buried it, but I didn't bury it. I buried it very shallowly.
Mm.
Somebody found it, tried to clean it, but it was under there enough to where it looked really dirty and fucking grimy. Oh my God. That's a scary angle. Right? I love that old Instagram border though.
Yeah.
Like before they had it's the filters
one
without
of the
it.
Old Instagram filters. Yeah.
Oh, that's hold on guys. This is from 2012.
Yeah. I was a senior in high school. It has 3 likes on Instagram.
Oh my, those fundamental pictures back in the day.
Yeah. It was from October 30th. So this is my
right before Halloween.
Yeah. What? Cause if we did like bonding things. So this was, I think the night before we went to the haunted trails in San Diego, which is like a, there isn't really an equivalent here in LA, but it's like the Balboa Park, mm-hmm. you know, like Balboa Park.
Yeah.
They would turn it into like a haunted trail.
Oh, that's badass.
Yeah, it was really cool, but there were different levels. So there's mm-hmm. the haunted trail and then there's the haunted hotel and they're run by the same company. Mm-hmm. The haunted trail is like the PG-13 version. Mm. And then the haunted hotel was like the rated R version. And
interesting.
Since we were all in high school, we could only go to the haunted trails one, even though we all wanted to go to the haunted hotel. When I was in high school, there was this rumor that it was so scary that if you made it all the way to the top, there you'd get your money back.
Fucking high school rumors. I know. Oh my God.
It was because each floor you had an option to exit. So basically, you started at one end, you'd go to the other end, and then you'd go up and go over again.
Yeah.
Every floor you had an option to leave, and then you'd be done.
Interesting. That's a good psychological trip.
Yeah. And the rumor was if you made it all the way to the top, it was so scary that if you made it to the top, you'd get your money back.
Yeah, that's fucking insane. I love that.
So, yeah. So,
nice.
Here, I'll screenshot it now and then.
Actually, but with that doll that my sister had, mm-hmm. somebody found it because she, you know, really wanted the doll. But it was never able to be as clean as it was before. So I did this to myself. The doll looked 10 times scarier.
You played yourself.
I know, I fucking did. And then I remember going into the restroom, because my sister had just used it. I didn't know somebody dug up the doll. And I saw it on the counter, on its side, with its eyes fucking open. And I was just like, ah! I was freaking out. I'm like, Mom, what happened to the... Oh, yeah, I think your sister accidentally buried it in the backyard, so I had to get it because she was crying for it. She probably forgot. And I'm like, yeah, Lanessa did it. Oh, that's why it's here. I think I was like, the doll's alive.
You had this brief moment where you were like, the doll's gonna murder me in my fucking sleep.
She's trying to kill me.
Oh, no. You like traumatized yourself.
I just, every solution I had for this just made it worse.
Yeah, well, that's true 6-year-old logic.
Yeah. Then I'll never see the doll again. Oh my gosh.
It's back.
Oh, god damn. It actually gave me chills remembering that. Because just, it was on the side, its side.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked dirty, fucked up, and one of its eyes got broken. So it was just this one dead eye with the eyelid just like, like that. And then one eye just staring fucking straight.
That's a horror film in and of itself.
I gotta find this fucking doll. Like, honestly, if you looked at it, it's literally the same portions as Chucky. It scared the shit out of me.
That's what, because it's funny, because, like, the whole film, I was just, like, the proportions of Chucky, like, he's a pretty big doll.
No, oh, yeah, he is a big, I mean, she was probably a little smaller doll, because my sister was a little tiny. Wait, wasn't my sister, no, my sister was barely born. It wasn't my sister, it was one of my cousins or something, oh, now that okay. I remember about it, yeah.
That's funny.
So, wait, real quick, what is your kill of the film, though?
My kill of the film, I would say, I think Melissa?
Maggie.
It was an M. Maggie, in the beginning, I think that one got me because I felt the worst for her.
Honestly, that's my kill of the film, too.
Really? That's okay.
For a little bit of a different reason, because to me, it's the most Hitchcockian scene of the whole film. Like, it's straight up shows you almost nothing.
Yeah.
It has suspense, has the phone it thing. It builds,
yeah.
The camera work is fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's the most mysterious for the whole film.
Yeah, it's the mysterious because it's also in the very beginning of the film. But mm-hmm. I also just, like, I really loved Maggie's character.
Yeah, I loved her character, too.
Like, I really loved her character. Like, she was such a good friend, and she was, like, a sympathetic, good mm-hmm. character. So I understand why they killed her.
Yeah.
She
was strong.
But she was a good character, and it bums me out that she was only in the movie for, like, 20 minutes. But, yeah. like, she brightened up that 20 minutes, so. Oh,
she's, like, that 80s character with, like, shoulder pads and an attitude. Like, you have to believe this fucking guy. Do it yourself, like, kind of thing. Like, she straight up is a go-getter.
Yeah.
She took care. Ever she's like, I'll watch Andy, you do your thing, this is for you, you need the Christmas money. Like, she's just good.
Yeah, she's just a good friend. Like, and then, like, she's trying whatever she can do to make her friend's life easier.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, so that's, I think that's sweet. And, like, I don't know, I really appreciated her character. And then I think her murder was the one, not one, but one of the few scenes of the movie that I distinctly remember. Because, like I said, this is only, like, the second, maybe, time. Second or third time I've watched this movie. So, her murder was the one that consecutively, like, always stuck with me. That I, if mm-hmm. someone was just like, oh, name a scene in Chucky, and I'd be like, Maggie gets pushed out of a fucking window after taking a toy hammer to the head.
Yeah. It's good in that it's not overly graphic either.
Mm-mm.
Like, compared to the voodoo stabbing later mm-hmm. on and the electrocution in the with yeah. the heart things later on, which actually, that was actually pretty brutal too. Like, the way they did his face makeup was pretty fucked up.
Oh yeah, and he started bleeding and his eye started popping
and
out.
And he's all
yeah.
charred.
Gross.
That was, yeah. I thought that was pretty good too, but yeah, Maggie, it's just, the way it was put together was honestly suspenseful.
Yeah.
It was really fucking suspenseful.
It was suspenseful. I could have sworn the detective guy got murdered, though. Like, I could have sworn he got, like, murked.
Really? Well, he was close.
I know.
He was very,
yeah,
very close.
Yeah, very close several times, but I remember I was like, the whole time I was just like, I really like his character. Too bad he dies, and then I got to the end of the movie, and I'm like, he's not dead.
He's not dead, no. However, kid me, when he's underneath, the car's flipped over, and he's helpless, and Chucky's like, all around him.
Fucking creepy.
My whole underneath the covers thing was useless because I can hear the scene.
Oh, you could hear, like, the little, like,
yes. Yeah. And then little me was like, there's no fucking way to escape this. But I didn't want to look like a little bitch, so I just stayed
out. You were 6 years old.
You know, but my little brother was watching the film. That's just how it was.
Whatever.
He's like 4 and like not phased.
Probably
and,
because he doesn't understand. He's
no,
just like,
yeah.
He's just like, huh? It's like, I don't know. Because my sister's 4. So I feel like she'd be able to, like, she would freak out. But mm-hmm. also, she's really observant. Like, she's freakishly observant.
I feel like maybe my brother was just like, yeah, whatever, it's a doll kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. he's just playing.
Well, yeah, he's also just like, it's not going to murder me. Meanwhile, you're just like, I'm going to get murdered.
I'm Andy's age.
I am Andy.
Okay, so we wanted to talk about this too, guys, because this episode of Living Doll was a very big inspiration for this. Not only just Don Mancini, but for the whole basis of killer dolls. And the way it was done was the staple for a while, and Chucky obviously went against that.
Mm-hmm.
So the studios latched on to Chucky because of how different it was from this. But firstly, what did you think of Talking Tina? What did you think of the Living Doll episode of The Twilight Zone?
I was texting you about this last night.
Oh, yeah. But... we were live texting mostly.
The episode in question.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up watching The Twilight Zone, first
Same
of
here.
All.
Same here, yeah.
So I grew up watching it. I had it on, I had like a, my brother had like a DVD set.
That's awesome.
So we'd watch it pretty frequently. Because he was obsessed with The Twilight Zone, and mm-hmm. then, like, because we butt heads a lot, like, when mm-hmm. especially when we were kids, I didn't want to be interested in it, because it was what he was obsessed with at the time.
Typical sibling shit, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, also, my twin definitely would, like, hyper-fixate on things at a time, so mm-hmm. he would be, like, absolutely obsessed. So he was absolutely obsessed with The Twilight Zone for a while. This happened later when we were a little bit older, when he was obsessed with wrestling.
Oh, WWF, yeah!
Yeah, and I really didn't want to get into it because he was so into it, but I just remember just getting so into it.
It's because motherfucking the rattlesnake Stone Cold Steve Austin is why right there.
Actually, it was because of Shawn Michaels.
Okay. Fucking Heartbreak Kid, HBK, yeah. All right, I can give it to that one. Yeah, that was was a motherfucker.
My brother had, like, a box set all about, like, Shawn Michaels' career.
Oh, that's awesome.
Anthony's nerding out right now.
Yeah.
That and, like, just everything about, like, D-Generation X and everything. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was just, like, that whole fucking thing was just, like, my shit.
Oh, real quick. Do you remember the Rock and Sock connection?
No.
The Rock and Mankind?
Yes.
A tag team fucking...
Uh-huh. I remember that very, very vaguely, but yes.
That was my shit.
Yeah?
Oh. Well, Mankind was like my... I bought his book.
My brother also obsessed with Mick Foley.
Yes. I bought his book was the best. I was like... When he started... Okay, no. We're getting too far.
The point is, my twin was obsessed. My brother, who is my twin, was really into The Twilight Zone. So we mm-hmm. watched it all the time. I think we only had a couple seasons. Mm-hmm. But also, because they're only like 25 minutes.
Yeah.
We would like just burn through like episodes. So the Talking Tina episode was the one that scared my twin and I the most.
Mm. Yeah. It was one of the scariest ones.
Well, yeah. Because my brother would also go around trying to freak me out and be like, my name's Talking Tina and I don't like you very much. And I'd be like, ah!
No, that's a boy's voice.
And I would just, like, not like it at all one fucking bit. So funny. I watched it as a kid a lot. So it freaked me out. So this is... I actually did not want to watch it. But then Anthony texted me and was just like, this is your homework. You need to watch this episode. Yep. And I was like, fuck, fine. I'll do it. Much to my... everything telling me not to, because it freaks me out.
Mm-hmm. It's like Chucky, yeah, visceral reaction.
Totally visceral reaction. So I love the episode. It creeps me out. I didn't remember the stepdad being as much of a douche.
Piece
of
shit, dude.
He's okay, a douchebag.
Real quick, we gotta put a synopsis in here. Talking Tina, if you guys haven't seen it, is a mother buys a doll for her little girl and brings it home. She puts it on the account, and the husband... who's kind of a piece of shit overall, and like he's the stepfather to the kid,
and he has his own fucking issues where he's just like salty because I guess he can't get her pregnant.
They can't have kids. Yeah.
So he's just salty and doesn't want to accept her as his child.
Yeah, he can't take that leap.
I know, which is so fucking sad.
But she loves him.
I know, she wants him to be happy. Like, the daughter is just, like, super sweet and is just like, I'm sorry, daddy. And, like, mm-hmm. he's just like, it's fine.
I'm not your daddy.
Yeah, okay, that's later. But, like, because it's just stressful, dude. It's stressful. Like,
but this little doll starts talking in her little voice box, but saying words she's not supposed to.
Yes, talking to him only when he's alone. And the line is, my name's Talkie Tina and I love you very much. Mm-hmm. And that's what she says, like, you know, I'm not going to do it in the voice because that's just annoying. But
do it, please.
My name's Talkie Tina, and I love you very much.
I love it. Yes.
And then later, she'll say, like, the same thing, but instead, my name is Talkie Tina, and I don't like you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And then she keeps saying, like, I think I'm starting to hate you.
Yeah.
And, like, just really ominous, like, menacing shit.
Yes.
And he's just, like, talking to the doll, and, like, the wife would come in, and the doll would just be, like, back to normal. And, of course, it's, like, the doll's gaslighting him.
It is. Yeah.
And he's just like, the doll's fucking talking. And she's like,
he thinks it's her, right?
Yeah. Later, eventually, he's just like, oh, I'm not up to date with all this technology hullabaloo. And
fucking typical 50s. Just like, I came back from the war. What's this bullshit?
And he thinks there's a walkie-talkie because the doll only says creepy shit when they're alone. So he thinks, instead of the doll actually being sentient, the wife or the daughter are saying mean shit to him from the other room.
Yeah.
And that is not the case, but we get there. So the episode overall ends when she's getting more and more menacing. Finally, him and the wife have a fucking blowout conversation where she's like, I'm going to leave you. Like, this is ridiculous. And he's just like, no, like, I'm sorry. I'll give her the doll back. We'll figure it out. And he basically, after wrapping the doll up, putting it in a trash can, and putting bricks on top of the trash
can.
After torturing the doll, which he can't do because he tries to melt her, but the soldering thing keeps blowing out before it can actually reach her. And she's just like, hee-hee-hee-hee.
Real quick, I love that dialogue that he says to her. She's like, I thought you can feel things. And she's like, I can handle it if you can't. I'm like, oh my fucking, this doll... Talk some shit, dude.
Yeah. No, the doll's, like, definitely antagonistic for sure. Mm-hmm. But the point is he releases the doll and she's just like, I don't forgive you.
Yeah, I don't forgive you.
He tries to make peace with the sentient doll and she doesn't forgive him. Yeah. And the doll goes back with the daughter and then he hears a noise in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And he gets up and he goes to investigate. Tina is on the first step and he does not see and he falls and he snaps his neck.
Yep.
And that's how the episode, well, that's actually not how the episode ends. The wife comes down and right next to his body is the doll and she says, my name is Talking Tina and you better be nice to me.
Oh, dude.
And that's how the episode ends.
23 minutes of just horror right there.
Yeah, the Twilight Zone is so effective for telling concise mindfuckery of a story in 23 minutes. Like, it's super effective, super short, straight to the point. Really awesome.
I love that we both watched it as kids too, because my mom, honestly, she always introduced me to stuff like that. Yeah. And like she introduced me to The Omen and shit. And but we would watch The Twilight Zone when it was on TV. Oh, they do marathons here and there.
Well, my mom's not really into she's into psychological stuff. Like she actually introduced me to Silence of the Lambs, which is my favorite movie ever. Yeah. She likes certain like horror films. She also introduced me to the 2003 Zodiac film
with David Fincher's, huh?
Yeah. With Robert Downey Jr. And Jake Gyllenhaal and Mark Ruffalo and everything.
That's a good movie.
It's a really good movie. I fucking love that movie. And I actually had the opportunity to introduce it to my brother.
Nice.
Last Christmas, I think, when I was there. And he was just like, let's watch a movie. And I was like, okay. And Zodiac was on. Like,
it's
watch
like
a
3 hours.
It's like a 2.5 hour long movie. Yeah. It's a long as shit movie. But he was like glued to the TV the whole time.
Well, Fincher knows how to pace a fucking film, man. Honestly, him and Scorsese are like two that like, the time just flies.
Yeah. Well, for my brother also, he's really into cults right now.
Isn't everybody?
So it's very nice because like, it's funny because I didn't realize until I was an adult that we all have really weird fascinations with true crime. Like, my mom does. And my brother does, too. Like, specifically with cults. Because we all fucking love cults.
Same. Me and my brother as well. Yeah.
So it's really weird.
Cult podcasts. Jonestown. Yeah. So we get real into Jonestown.
Oh, yeah. I still need to re-listen to the last podcast, Jonestown. Yeah, because I only listened to it as it came out, but it was for, like, a month and a half. So I was just like, I'm over it.
Case Files 1 is... To me, the better one, honestly. It's really good.
Yeah, I still have to listen to that one, too.
But, so when it comes to Talking Tina, before I diverted there, what do you think the primary lessons Chucky took from there? And then what are the parts that were actually, like, diverted? What do you think, like, the good parts that... Because Talking Tina is fundamental.
Right.
It's fundamental.
I think the parts that... who took it?
Child's Play, right, like Mancini.
Mancini, that guy. I think the part that Mancini took the most was honestly like the subtle gaslighting of the talking dolls, because it makes you feel insane.
Yeah,
it makes you feel like you're completely losing your shit at the idea of this doll talking, but only to certain people, and it's completely normal. So specifically with the tiny child. With Andy, when Chucky would talk to Andy, but when it was just the two of them, so that the second an adult was in the room, he would act normal and say the normal like lines, which was also creepy as shit.
I love the Maggie part when he like sees her shadow and he blinks and says a regular Chucky line, knowing that she would hear him if he actually talked to Andy.
Yeah.
That was fucking smart.
Yeah. Super, like, you know, that I think that was creepy. But also, up until that point, like, you have inklings of thinking, like, what if this kid actually is killing people?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Even though you see voodoo, even though you see all this, the way they present it is strong.
Yeah, so I think that's part of, like, I think one of the fundamental things it takes from the Takitina episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where it obviously diverts is it's a lot more menacing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're actually looking at a doll that is possessed by a human.
And the basically. Doll's turning human, which yes. is the actually very fucking creepy part
Which
of
is
this.
Very, very creepy.
Yeah.
So I think those are the parts where it diverges the most, but mm-hmm. I think they're done in such an effective way that it's able to stand alone away from its origins with the Twilight Zone.
It's a good upgrade, but like... shift in how people, I think, would have seen it
yeah.
up until that point. They're like, well, obviously the doll's going to be... No, we're going to make the doll... We're going to bring 80s slasher into this concept, which yeah. is perfect. I mean, it's 80s. There's an explosion in the beginning. There's mm-hmm. fucking all this stuff. But at the end of the day, it's almost a Hitchcockian slasher at some points.
Yeah.
Like, really throws me off. But I love it. I love the way it's presented.
Yeah, and the shots that are taken from Chucky's point of view, which mm-hmm. I think is really cool. Or the fact that we don't... actually see him move a whole lot until the very end, until towards the end
it's of the second It's until 45 half. Minutes into the film.
Yeah.
Which is for... there's only...
That's halfway through the
halfway
film.
Halfway through the film,
at least.
Yeah.
Like, it's over halfway through the film.
Although the scene where he reveals himself, or in the original script, it was in the last, I think, 20 minutes.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, it was really going to play the game up until that back part,
mm-hmm.
and then hit you with it. Okay, so with that... I found this interesting. So, Talking Tina and Child's Play are both very vastly different in certain ways, though.
Right.
Like, one's way more graphic in this, and then one's more subtle and mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that kind of says something about Talking Tina being from the 60s, and, like, what their standards were then, and then in terms of the 80s, like, what did it pull from the 80s that's totally a Chucky thing? Like, something that just is not yeah. even feasible back then.
That's a good question. I think that the Talking Tina episode from the 60s, obviously, like, it couldn't have the same gruesome nature. It's the Twilight
yeah,
Zone.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Twilight Zone is completely prides itself and bases itself around a certain type of cerebral horror mm-hmm. that we don't get to see as much now, like we did in the 60s.
Yes.
I think, like I said, they each have their own different standalone aspects that set them apart.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, with Child's Play in the 80s, like, you get the explosions, you get the blood, you mm-hmm. get the cursing. Like, you get very in-your-face type of gruesomeness, to the point where they're both unsettling, but for different reasons.
No, I love that. That's actually perfect, 'cause to me, like, it's a very good... exercise in how different the filmmaking styles were from then, because
yeah.
the 80s was exactly that, and then in the 60s, Talking Tina, they have no problem with ambiguity.
No,
but like, not the we forgot to explain things. It's like, no, the doll's possessed, we're not gonna explain that. It's just gonna be a creepy doll, and it's gonna leave it to you to figure
decide.
Out why that's
well,
that.
Also, I think that's a time thing, because, like, they mm-hmm. have 23 minutes. How much exposition can they fit into 23 minutes, but also tell a creepy fucking story?
True. But I think, knowing the Twilight Zone, they wouldn't bother.
Mm-mm.
They honestly would never bother. They did. Rod
well,
Sterling likes,
it's,
yeah.
Right, it's also the whole point of the Twilight Zone. Like, mm-hmm. you're going into this creepy dimension.
Yeah,
you know,
where
like
things
that,
aren't quite what they fucking see.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about the Twilight Zone, is because... it, like, going into the quote-unquote Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. a lot of things aren't necessarily explained. And, like, I love Rod Sterling for this, because,
yes.
like, he always, like, his elaborations in the beginning or the end, like,
mm-hmm.
like, he insinuates that a lot of, like, that manifestation of the child's id is
mm-hmm.
kind of, like, what...
it's in this.
It's in Talking Tina,
mm-hmm.
because he specifically mentions, like, in, you know, like, a child might project those sorts of feelings onto a doll in, like... a normal world,
yeah.
but in the Twilight Zone, this is where this, you know, the doll comes to life and kills the object of her frustration.
Yeah.
Because he's a dick.
And I noticed, though, his little last line, which I didn't put in here, but, you know, Rod Sterling always wraps it up.
Mm-hmm.
This time he was a lot more simplistic. He was like, a talking doll. And then, like, it was just literally, like, two lines.
Good Rod Sterling.
Yeah. And it was, but that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was barely any, like, explanation as to what really just happened. It's,
right.
It was, again, like, he knew that if he did too much, because he always wraps it up like that.
Yeah,
but
he always wraps it up with, like, a nice enough bow that you
nice
can, like.
Thematic.
Yeah, that you can, like, take it, internalize it, and move
mm-hmm.
on, and not really sit there thinking, like, well, well, how did this happen? How did the doll get possessed? Why is it the way it is? It lets you think, but it doesn't stick with you to the point where you feel like things are left unanswered.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And which I think is really, you know, a staple of the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. And then also, I really like the whole family dynamics between them. Because the 80s, single mothers and all, it's not as taboo as it was in the 60s. 60s, they are like, yeah, of course she's going to get married. Or he's going to be a piece of shit. She's a single mother, whatever. Like that's just, to make the nuclear family keep going, that's basically what it is. Yeah. Whereas opposed to the Child's Play, it's like, we don't care what happened to the dad. She's just going to have to raise this kid by herself and struggle, have economic issues, but still need to be consumer, still need to do this while all this other shit's happening.
It's cute, though, because, like, she works so hard to make sure he has, like, all this good guy stuff. Yeah. Because, like, he has, like, the good guy tool set and the shoes and, like, the overalls. Like,
she wants to give him a good life.
She busts her ass to make sure that, like, he gets good shit, like, to make him happy. Because he's a fucking adorable child and deserves the world.
Where fucking Talking Tina is just, like, the mom does it, but she had to sneak around the dad.
Yeah.
And like, it's for the sake of the nuclear family. Basically.
Yeah, definitely. But, so, if basing off this film alone and not the rest of the franchise, who would you find more chilling, Talking Tina or Chucky? Because for me, it's Talking Tina, hands down.
Really?
Yeah. No doubt.
There's something about the look of Chucky, honestly.
Well, because I think because Chucky had such an almost borderline traumatic effect impact on you as a child.
Yeah, that's true.
I can see why Chucky would be terrifying. For me, it's Talking Tina, no doubt.
The first time I saw Talking Tina, actually, it wasn't with my mom. It was as some teacher let us stay in during lunch and was like, I'm going to play an episode of Twilight Zone. If you kids want to chill, you guys can watch it. And we were like, well, we brought food.
What grade were you in?
I forget. Maybe six? I'm not sure. Yeah.
Okay, you're old enough to watch it, Twilight Zone.
Exactly. No. I mean, I had watched it a bunch before that anyways, or around that. But then I remember watching it and like having a fear of dolls already because of Chucky. But, like, that might have been what made me ready to watch the rest of Child's Play, was Talking Tina.
Okay.
Yeah, because I remember watching it and thinking, like, okay, I'm scared, but it's not that bad. I can handle this.
Yeah, totally.
It was a test, and it was actually really, really nice. But Talking Tina has a similar level of, like, iconography to me, like, in terms of just how I look at them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, they're both huge fucking staples to me, because I had to really, like, bring myself out to watch Talking Tina because of what Chucky had done to me. But it was a good gateway to come back to this series.
Yeah, totally. No, I get that. I think for me, Talking Tina, because I saw Talking Tina first.
Yeah, yeah, that's
and
true.
I didn't watch Chucky until I was an adult.
Oh, that makes sense.
So, like, an actual, like, adult. I think I was, like, 19.
No, and you know what, though? I do like that Talking Tina doesn't animate, doesn't change her face, doesn't do this. She's just a fucking doll.
Yeah, and that's part of what I like and what makes it really creepy, because then it begs the question, what doll isn't that? Doesn't have that, like, evil, lurking, you know, soul or whatever.
Well, which brings it to the next portion. So what makes the concept of this killer doll scary? Because the gaslighting thing you said, I believe that's 100% what really makes it, because, you know, you can say all you want to, you'll do whatever to the doll, but really, people got to believe you, otherwise you're fucking up a doll.
Yeah. No, I think in terms of, like, people who are deathly afraid of Chucky, while people who are generally unaffected, I think it has to do with, honestly, whether or not they have siblings.
Really?
I think it has to do with, because, like, okay, here's the thing. Anyone who's had siblings probably at some point has had some, like, sibling fuck with their toys.
Yes.
Or their doll or whatever. In my case, I'm a twin, so I've always had a sibling. Like, I've never been an only child.
That's true.
So I think, and his interests in, like, creepy, like, in, like, the Twilight Zone, I think also had an impact on that. But also I think it has an impact on whether or not you watch Chucky as a child.
Yeah, that's true. 'Cause, like,
Seeing Talking Tina as a child, that's what fucked me up more versus Chucky. I didn't really have an interest in seeing it.
Yeah.
Because even then, even as a teenager and, like, in high school and stuff, there was a camp factor for Child's Play that didn't appeal to me the way it does now. Because, like I said, I've always been a very, like, not logical, but, like, practical in terms of what I enjoy in my horror. The, like, continuity, the, like, the campiness, like, Chucky's face didn't give me Uncanny Valley as much as it gave me, like, campy feel. Like, it mm-hmm. felt campy to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he had that connotation behind him, too. Like, yeah. for as long as I imagine that you had consciousness.
Right.
Because for me, it wasn't the case. He didn't really, that Camp Chucky wasn't really known until mm-hmm. maybe the third one. But more Bride of Chucky, honestly.
Yeah. So, it felt campy to me, so I was generally unaffected. However, watching it now as an adult creeps me the fuck out. Like, I still don't like dolls. Dolls creep yeah. me out. And I think that is tied to an Uncanny Valley thing, mm-hmm. Which does still upset me. Yeah. I still don't like mannequins. I still don't like dolls. I don't like porcelain dolls. I don't like the porcelain angels.
I hate porcelain dolls, dude. I fucking hate porcelain dolls so much. I'm looking over right now, I'm just... Fuck. The ones I've seen in my life, I'm yeah. like, they've all been shitty and yeah. scary. But it for me, it's like, what do you call it, with Chucky's scare factor. Like, mm-hmm. it's just, his face just kind of does it for me. I remember also, The Bride of Chucky.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't as into film when that movie came out. So
gotcha.
Before that, you know, obviously we go to movies, see trailers, whatever mm-hmm. it is like that. I didn't know there was going to be a sequel to Chucky. So I'm in the theater, like, watching whatever fucking movie me and my family are going to watch. And the trailer for Bride of Chucky is interesting because it shows a cop grab something and put it in a bag. And it's in rain. And he has to take this bag somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he parks in some abandoned lot. And the rain keeps pouring down. In my mind, I'm, like, so into it. I'm like, what's in the bag? What's going to happen? What the fuck?
What's in the bag?
What's in the bag? but I remember... Little, you know, I was probably just a teenager. I was mm-hmm. a young teenager, but I still had, you know, a visceral fear of Chucky.
Right.
So Jennifer Tilly comes out, and you don't know, it's just Jennifer Tilly. I'm so like, just... oh, it's the girl from Liar Liar. And the guy gets killed, and she kills him, I believe. And then she goes around to the other side of the door, and she grabs the bag, and I'm like, I'm going to find out what's in the bag. Fucking cool. And she pulls out Chucky's face all fucked up.
Oh, like his head?
Not his head, just the... Because in Child's Play 3, he gets fucking chopped up. So it's just the front part of his face.
Mm.
And, like, the fear just came back. And I'm like, no, 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 no. Like, covering my fucking eyes looking down. But I see enough to where they show the new way Chucky looks, all stitched up.
Oh, when he has, like, all the... Yeah.
And that was fucking terrifying. So young teenage me's like, I'm never going to get over this. I'm never going to get over this. Fuck. Fuck. And it's a short trailer.
Right.
But, you know, I'm in a theater. I can't avoid it. I'm just hearing it. And they talk in the trailer about a new doll. And of course I have to look. And Tiffany scares the shit out of me too. Because she looks a little bit like that other doll that I buried back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I loved, like, the Tiffany doll.
Tiffany was cool. Well, I mean, that brings us to the last portion of this in terms of the franchise as a whole. Like, well, first, like, how does this film stack up to the Universal sequels that would happen after this?
Well, I've only seen a couple.
Okay, which ones have you seen?
So I've seen Child's Play, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen Child's Play 2. I've seen Bride of Chucky. I've seen Seed of Chucky. I've seen The Cult of Chucky. So,
oh, okay. So you haven't seen all of them.
I haven't seen all of them.
Have you seen The Curse of Chucky?
Yes.
Okay. Because that was Curse and Cult.
Seen both. Because one of them was on TV, and then the Cult is the one that was exclusively on Netflix.
They were both on Netflix.
Okay, then I've definitely seen both.
Yeah.
Because DJ loves the fucking Child's Play series. Yeah, so I'm
interesting.
Just like...
So you haven't seen 3, and possibly not 2.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to look it up.
Okay, interesting.
Because the only reason why I'm pretty sure I haven't seen 2 is because at the end of 1, he looks pretty fucking dead. So I'm just like, how does he come back from that? So I...
Oh, I forget. Some factory bullshit. Like, it's stupid. It's done in the credits.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't seen it. So, maybe? I don't know. I'll have to... They all kind of blend together.
So you have a lot more of the meta comedic understanding of Chucky with the sequels.
That's why I'm not a huge fan of the series, because I've only ever seen the campy ones.
Oh my gosh, no, we gotta watch 2 and 3.
I
mean, there's a little more camp than this first one,
right?
But it's still, there's still horror.
I want to see that transition, because for me it's a very stark, very immediate jump from creepy to campy.
I'd say it gradually, it incrementally increases, and then Bride is, like, huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a huge boost towards campy. Although these films do gore really well,
right.
So I feel like that consistency stays.
But gore and camp are kind of in that gratuitousness
mm-hmm.
that I think, you know, kind of makes them get along so well.
They do, yeah. It could be a little excessive.
Exactly. So, like, Bride of Chucky, Seed of Chucky just reminds me of, like, the A-Team. Like, yeah. You know, like, that campiness factor to yeah. it that I'm just like, eh, it's not really my thing, but...
Three has a little more, I think, but there's something weird about... So, I don't know, two, not as much... Although, I looked at the trailer for 2, and they played it up like it was going to be fucking camp.
Really? I can see that.
But 2 is funny, because to me, it's way more graphic than this one.
Mm.
And the way it's shot is not dark. It's not like a horror. It's shot really bright. Like, okay. It's shot, like, suburban with colors and saturation. So to see gore and mm-hmm. blood with that kind of filter
yeah.
makes it a lot more... like gruesome.
Yeah, well, because this one's pretty dark.
It's horror.
Yeah,
yeah, like, it's straight horror. But
in terms of like color mm-hmm. and like when they like most of the outside films are at night.
Yeah,
or it's in the middle of winter, so it's snowing and it's cloudy. It has a
distinctive look to it, and actually.
It's
yeah,
dark. Like they use a lot of like blues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and browns.
And,
like,
just,
yeah, yeah. No, the later ones are not like that at yeah. all. Except 3, maybe a little bit. But
yeah, I'll have to check them out, and I will report back. But
well, we'll get to those at some point. Yeah, I'll tell you what, guys.
We have many more Christmases to get through, and apparently, Child's Play is arguably a Christmas movie. So, yes.
Chucky yeah, Christmas movie every year. No, let's not do that. That's not a good idea.
And I know we're gonna have like our Decembers booked for like the next for like
fucking ever. 5 years yeah. and shit.
No, we'll cover it as they come up because Anthony likes the franchise, and I'm not opposed to the franchise. Mm-hmm. I enjoy aspects of it. I really enjoyed the first one though.
Yeah, the first one is the most well made, I think, of the films. I would actually, I'd only cover up to Bride as much as I like the Curse and Cult.
They're different.
Well, I mean, yeah. Oh, fuck. How do we put this? I would break them down into segments. The first three are horror. Bride and Seed are straight up camp, comedy, horror, like yeah. that. And then Curse and Cult are more meta and in between tonally. Mm-hmm. Like, they're right in there. So it comes out in segments. But there is a TV show coming out soon. We'll see how that...
So, yeah. So, in terms of what the franchise is looking for or going towards in the future, we have a TV show coming mm-hmm. through Universal?
Yeah, I believe. At least Don Mancini. Them? Yeah.
So, one is...
Universal's
doing a TV show. And then MGM is doing a movie remake.
With Aubrey Plaza. Fucking April Ludgate as a mom.
That's awesome. She also was in an episode of Criminal Minds, and I love her in it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my, okay, see, I've never watched Criminal Minds.
I know. You know, it's funny, I was, hi, Caitlin. I was talking to my friend about this, and she was just like, Anthony hasn't seen Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
Because she, for some reason, expected you to watch it for some reason.
It's just right past my generation.
Is it?
I think so.
I watched it when I was in, like, sixth grade, dude.
No, didn't watch it.
Interesting. Yeah. Anyway,
I was an asshole teen at that point. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I know. Piece
anyway.
Of shit.
Anyway. But yeah, so where was I going with this? Anyway, so they're doing a movie remake and a TV show, both of which are kind of, I think the TV show is more diverting from the original lore.
It is, yeah.
While the movie is a tried and true remake.
Not 100%.
Really? Okay. From what I heard, it was more of like an actual remake.
Well, they can use certain aspects of the mm-hmm. first film, but Chucky's not, there's no voodoo. There's no possession. There's nothing like that.
Okay.
So there's going to be this tale of a mother and her child, and she gets the doll. But it's a lot more of a commentary on today's culture where...
So it's another kind of stab at consumerism.
Yeah. So the doll gets an update, or some guy in the back fucks with it and programs it to be murderous.
Oy.
Yeah.
That's weird. And Brad Dourif is going to be in the TV series.
He's in the TV series.
I don't think he's going to be in the movie.
Nobody knows what the voice of Chucky's actually going to sound like in...
The movie. Knowing Brad Dourif, they're going to somehow... He's going to be able to do both. No.
He's the guy selling Chucky.
No, that would be really cool. But no, Brad Dourif, to me, is the iconic voice of Chucky, and I don't know if I'll be able to take the movie as seriously if they don't have Brad Dourif in it.
I agree. Honestly, Dourif is Chucky.
Yeah.
He is. He just is. There's no way around that.
So, that's my thought anyway, but yeah, I think This is just as a good place as any. We are looking towards the future of Child's Play, and yes. as that happens, we'll update everyone accordingly once all of that comes out and we watch it. I'm sure Anthony will have many, many thoughts.
Oh, yeah. Whenever I watch that, you'll hear it on this podcast for a whole different episode. By the way, did you guys see this fucking blah, 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 blah?
Yeah, because you sound just like that.
Yes. These guys, listeners know.
But yeah, so we'll just call it a day here.
Yes, any let's go.
Last thoughts?
No, y'all know how Chucky fucked me up now on a very detailed level. That's just me.
Anthony's psychological trauma.
But I'm down to watch the rest of, well, not the rest of them. Most. 2, 3, and Bride, I'm into. Okay. So we can do that at some
we'll
point.
We'll cover them at some point. We should do Cult.
Cult is good too.
Cult is pretty good.
Okay, so Bride and Cult as like a way of showing what the series is in those phases.
Where it kind of
yes.
transgressed.
Yes, that's good. But what 2 and 3 we're definitely fucking doing.
Okay.
Because 3, we got to talk about this murder.
Oh, is there?
The pair of murders, remember? The ones that we talked about earlier.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So that's some true crime elements of that one. And 2 is honestly a excessive version of this film, which is very interesting to look at.
I'm down. So I think we'll just call it a day here, everyone.
All right,
thank
peace
you
out.
For listening and joining us on this. Kind of an unconventional plot or storyline or typical episode format.
Oddly comparative, which is, but I mean, Talking Teen is kind of badass.
Yeah.
So if you guys haven't seen it, fucking Netflix and Hulu has The Twilight Zone. Yeah. It's in season 5.
Yeah. If you like this format, let us know. We're always open to adjusting how we format our episodes. I personally really like having the discussion and having all the questions because, you know, we get to talk more about like what we know instead of like educating each other on things that we don't.
But every once in a while I like to do a play-by-play because we like to talk a lot of shit too.
Yeah, that's true.
That's some
talk
fun
mad
shit,
shit.
That's yes.
And that's always fun.
It's good to just break down a character and just beat them into submission, right? It's just verbally.
So as always, you can find us on all the social media hoopla. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Horror People Pod, and then you can find us on Instagram, and we are at Horrible People's Podcast, HORRORBLE People's Podcast.
Yay.
Anthony runs the Instagram, I run the Twitter, and then I pop on every now and again onto Instagram as necessary.
And
so
I pop in to see any contentious discussion or praise on Twitter.
Yes. I do send him screenshots regularly. So
yeah, whenever there's a comment chain going down, I'm like, all right, cool.
So that's nice.
Reactions, yes.
And then if you feel so inclined, Anthony is on Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler, and I am on Instagram at The Blonde Dictionary.
Sweet. And then next week, guys, we're going to delve into foreign horror.
Fuck yes. I have been waiting for this since we started, which at this point is going to be like 2.5 months, 3 months ago.
Yeah, that's true.
That we started. So I have been wanting to do this since the beginning. We've already covered one foreign horror film, which Perfect Blue.
That's right. That's right. Although it's not conventional horror.
Yes, really. That is animated horror. So it's a little bit different. This is our first actual live action foreign horror film. It's a bit of a classic. It has an American remake. I know you're thinking it's The Ring. I'm telling you now, it's not The Ring. But it is a classic Asian horror film.
Yes.
And it has an American remake that a lot of people don't even know was a remake of this film. So it's going to be good. My good friend Drea actually helped me pull together some academic research, so it's gonna be kind of research heavy. I'm gonna make it fun for everyone, but it's gonna be a very educational episode about the culture at the time of this film. So it'll be good.
This is Alex's Halloween, guys.
it'll be good.
It's Alex's Halloween. You know how I was leading up to that one. I was like
so I'm very excited for that, and hopefully it'll be a very similar format, hopefully, to The Fly. So if you enjoyed The Fly, hopefully keep that train going. So thank you for listening, and we'll catch you guys on the next one.
All right. Peace out, you fucking guys. Adios.
Bye, guys.